Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what the fucksters, what the fuck, fuck, well, what? I hit a what the fuck wall. Okay, that's it then, I guess. My brain said no. I don't know what's happening. I do know that Dax Shepard is on the show. I do know that Dax Shepard is in the movie This Is Where I Leave You with Tina Fey and Jason Bateman that opens this Friday. We did this this conversation a while back, had a good time. Great guy. Been through some shit. Enjoy talking to him. Hope you enjoy listening to it. What else is happening? What? I just have that weird feeling in my chest like something isn't finished. There's unfinished business in life. There's a void. Is it sadness? Is it loneliness? I don't know. I don't know what it is. Usually it goes away. Look, I'll be honest with you, folks. I'm as tired as you are of hearing myself go on about the same shit over and over again. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm tired of it. I've got nothing to complain about. It must be a mental thing. It must be an emotional thing. I seem to be incapable of maintaining a relationship with another person. Pow! Look out. Just shit my pants. JustCoffee.coop. Available at WTF Pod. I seem to have become cynical about relationships. I seem a bit angry at the idea of them. But what are you going to do? I've been doing these oddball shows, and I got to be honest with you, between me and you, as interesting and as exciting as it is to do comedy for, you know, 15,000, 20,000 people, not satisfying. There's this feeling like I can do this. I'm going to pick the jokes. I'm going to focus on them. I'm going to get punchline efficiency. I just want each one to hit, and then I want to get the fuck out of there. I want to leave before the traffic starts. It's making me feel a little weird and a little empty, actually. They're great shows, and I think for fans, they're great to see all these comics that are on the shows. They're fun, but I've spent so long trying to, you know, kind of pull it in and be open, as open as possible, and it's very hard to be as open as possible in front of 15,000 people. And then I start judging myself. I start thinking, like, you know, I watched Gaffigan the other night. And, you know, I go way back with Jim. And, you know, I know him for years. And I watched him at Oddball. And he was spectacular. Probably the best comic working in terms of straight up craft, efficiency, work ethic. I mean, he just does what he does. He's clean. His punchline efficiency is monumental. And I hadn't watched him in a long time, and I was just watching him going like, oh, fuck, man, I got work to do. And just watch the craft. I mean, this is one of the only guys, you know, me and Louie and Sarah and, you know, Hannibal. A lot of people are on these shows. But Jim Gaffigan is one of the biggest comics in the country. He's earned it. He's a family act. But the thing is, he's out there almost every night performing comedy for a fucking living. And his skill set is just awesome. It was just monumental, and it made me feel shitty. Not like I didn't feel bad about myself. I didn't feel like I was bad. I didn't feel like I didn't like Jim, but it just was this ongoing thing I have where it's like, I got to fucking work harder at stand up. I mean, what the fuck is wrong with me? I mean, I can get away with an awful lot, by talking and being intimate and just being, you know, impulsively funny when I do stand up, but he's got it all in place. You know, watching Jim work recently was just spectacular. Just to see a guy that sharp in his craft is just awesome. You just don't see it that often. I'm not saying other people are bad, but he's one of the few guys that do that sort of joke per minute, you know, every 30 second kind of comedy and make it, you know, and make it smooth and make it just seem like effortless. It was inspirational to me as a comic to watch my pal Jim Gaffigan perform in front of 15,000 people. It was also inspirational to me for doing that and not losing my mind. And because, you know, there's part of me that I don't know if I can really explain this, but I think I've probably explained it before. like, I'm really battling with the idea of, like, if I go up, like, I could, there's moments where I'm on stage at Oddball, and that's for 15,000, 20,000 people, and I'm on the big screens up there, whatever they're called, and I'm like, I could just sit here and not do anything. I could make it completely weird and completely awkward and maybe even cry in front of 15,000 people. Like, there's something that is so, I feel the vulnerability of it, the pressure of it. I would have lost my mind if I had to do a show that big when I was younger. I guess it's one of those things where I should just appreciate the progress and be thrilled, because I've been killing, man. I mean, I killed last night. It was fine. It's only 15 minutes, but I don't know. There's something not sitting right with me, man. And I got to work it out. That's why I hope these Trippany shows work out. I'll tell you, man. I was talking to Jim Gaffigan. He's got 5 kids. He doesn't wallow around in pools of his own bullshit in his head. Where's the time? That's one advantage of having a family. It's less about you out of necessity. But don't kid yourselves. People with kids can be plenty self-centered, too. And you know what? They'll make children that turn out to be like me. All right, let's talk to Dak.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Shepherd.
Oh, what do you know anything about me? Did you have to look me up today and find out that I'm an actor?
No, stuff? I happen to be the biggest Dax Shepherd fan, and
I don't believe that.
The country.
You're a bona fide a punk rock hardcore street cred comedian. And I was on Punked, or I was only in the Groundlings, or I walk in with all these things that think.
Be honest
oh,
with
you. Might
I'll be
not,
honest with you.
Yeah. I don't
first time I saw you was in Idiocracy.
Oh, then you probably like me.
That's right. And yeah. I had no idea who the hell that guy was. Mm-hmm. And I thought that guy just acted the fuck out of that
movie.
Oh,
thank you. Did you think he might be retarded?
No, because I'd never seen you as a comedic actor. I'm like, who the fuck is this guy out of nowhere?
Right.
This funny motherfucker just does this thing?
That makes me very happy.
That's where I saw you, and that was quite frankly the last thing I saw you.
I don't doubt it. If I got to pick one thing, you only saw me, and that would probably be it.
But I know we have common friends, and I know you were hilarious. And then I heard there was some trouble in your life,
mm-hmm.
and I heard that you fought the good fight.
Yeah,
I know you're married to a hot girl,
mm-hmm,
who
mm-hmm.
I think is funny.
Yes,
I like her.
Her hotness is like fourth on the list, but yes.
Yeah, well, that's a diplomatic thing for you to say.
No, it's a legit thing to say.
And you've always been pleasant to me. I met you, I believe, in the dressing room with the UCB with Tom Arnold, and at that time I was like, what's going on there?
Uh-huh, sure. We were probably doing Doug Benson's podcast.
It might have been. And I met you at in Bonnaroo with Doug.
Uh-huh.
But, and I was sort of curious as to, but that is that really where you started in TV? Was on Punked?
Yeah, well, I started at the Groundlings in 96.
Let's just say, how did the world see
you
first?
Yes, the world met me on Punked, the first season of
with
Punked.
Ashton.
Exactly.
And you and Ashton were buddies.
We were not buddies. I auditioned like most of the improvers in the city. I'd gone in to audition for this show, and I had like 26 callbacks. And finally, after 4 months of auditioning, I got the show. And then on the pilot, I became friends with him.
Yeah.
And then when we got home from the pilot, he really was, he did me a solid. He took me to his agency and said, this guy's really talented. You have to sign him.
It's the second time I've heard Ashton Kutcher do a nice thing in a week.
Oh, really?
He bought
the first?
Judy Greer's dad a Harley Davidson because he said he would if their show got picked up.
Uh-huh.
And the show got picked up, but it didn't go.
Uh-huh.
But he still bought her dad a Harley.
Yeah.
That's not a bad guy.
No, it's not. I think a lot of people hate him because he's gorgeous, and it seems like he got where he was at from being gorgeous. And that's annoying to people.
But where is he, really?
Well, he's got a shitload of money, I'll tell you that.
But is that what it's all about, Dax?
Well, it's... you. as you get money, you come to find out it's not what it's all about. But until you get it, yes, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I'd like to get the kind of money to realize that it's not about money. You know, honestly.
Well, no, the bar keeps moving. I had an idea of what X amount of dollars would feel
like.
What
was that number, Dex?
Let's say $1 million.
$1 million.
I thought, oh my God, if I had $1 million, my fantasy of what having $1 million was like, I wouldn't have to brush my teeth or watch what
it's
I
an outdated
ate.
Idea of what $1 million is.
It was extremely outdated. And side note, I watch a lot of these like kind of sports biographies of people, like 30 for 30s.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly shocked by like those contracts people signed in the day, like in 84, that seemed unbelievable. Like he's getting 1.6 million. And I'm like, that guy's still alive. That's not shit now. Like,
I wonder what he's up to, that guy.
It changes so quick. But at any rate, yeah,
so it
was a letdown.
Break,
like all my fantasies and expectations, it was a bit of a letdown to realize I still had to do all the business of being a normal human being. It didn't get me out of, well, it got me out of some things. I don't care about gas prices all that much, and I order pizza with reckless abandon. But
yeah, you'll throw down for dinner, maybe?
I do. I buy every all my friends' dinner.
I'm at a point where I don't have a wife. I don't have children. Mm-hmm. I've saved a little money. I'll go ahead and buy dinner.
Yeah, isn't it nice?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's for me, it's particularly nice because I that punked job came 10 years after I moved to LA. So I had been auditioning for tampon commercials and diarrhea medication and just not booking
anything. Were you a niche
performer? Yeah. I think I was. Yeah, and I have
tampon
a whole
and diarrhea commercials?
Yeah, I swear. I knew a lot about both those topics. Uh-huh. But I did fall into the niche bracket of commercial auditioning, which was I wasn't goofy enough to book anything and I wasn't handsome enough to book anything.
Nice.
I was just in this terrible.
Marginalized.
Yeah, I was very, very.
So where the hell do you come from? How do I see, like, how do I not, like, I was a little too old for punked when you were on it, but
sure.
I appreciate the mindset of it. I don't enjoy pranks.
No,
I think
me neither.
They're all mean.
Uh-huh.
And I don't like them happening to me. I don't like being part of them. But I'm not going to judge you for that.
Thank you.
Because
it was, for me, just an acting job.
Sure. But you're a very talented, funny guy. Where did this start? Where did you come out of the vagina screaming covered in blood?
Well, I'm from Michigan. I'm from a suburb of Detroit.
What suburb are you from?
Oh man, I lived in like seven of them, but I would say primarily this Milford, which was hillbilly paradise within.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Detroit hillbillies.
Yes.
But you
probably the worst version of white trash you can get.
How old are you now?
39.
Oh, so you're a youngster.
You think
man.
So?
I'm 50. You're not that young, but you're getting.
No, I'm not really not that young.
You're not a kid, but you know, you look good.
Thank you.
But Detroit was a great city. Do you remember it as a great city?
You know, no, it was not a great city, but I liked it a lot. Yeah. But it looked like shit, and we knew it looked like shit. We would go to Toronto occasionally because it's a three-hour drive.
Yeah.
A single mother would take us three kids to Toronto.
Single mother.
Yes. And we would think, oh my God, it's like Detroit, but it's clean and the windows aren't broken.
Oh, you ever go to Niagara Falls and go to the Canadian side? You're like, oh my God.
Yes, exactly.
Like you go to the Canadian side and you can look over the water at the end of the world
mm-hmm.
when you sit down.
Uh-huh.
It's just, it's so sad.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So what, where was your dad?
My dad, when I was three, they got divorced. Oh. He was a car salesman who was also an addict. He drove a red Corvette and did tons of blow and banged young girls.
Corvette
and,
blow young girl guy.
Uh-huh. He would take us, our weekends with him were spent at a bar called the Dirty Duck in Walled Lake, Michigan. And we would go in the winter and he would drive up there in his Corvette. My brother and I would share one seat, the passenger seat. It's not a family car. And we would go inside and he would, from 10 a.m. till midnight, he would just work the broads at the bar with his two kids. We'd play Pac-Man and eat chili dogs. And then invariably it would snow while we were in there because it's Michigan.
Yeah.
And then we would drive home with him in a blackout through 6 inches of fresh powder in a Corvette with some dingbat following us who would also invariably get thrown into a ditch and we'd be on the side of the road. I mean, it was a fucking circus these weekends with him.
Oh, my
and
God.
And then Sunday he'd like, you know, he'd have some come to Jesus moments and
oh, really?
Cry a little bit. I mean, it was
apology.
It was something else. But the upside,
did
I will
say.
Did
he do say, blow in front of you?
Not that I know of.
Oh.
No. I don't think so. But the upside was is so I had a mother who was a janitor on midnight shift at GM supporting three kids on her own, And then I had this swinging dick car salesman dad. So when we go to his house, we got to order pizza. He had a vet. He had a VCR. He had on TV.
Strange women were there.
Chicks everywhere. So it did help, you know.
You saw both
it was
worlds.
The silver lining.
The silver lining was
you got to eat Oreos there and drink pop and do all that stuff.
Well, Dad needed a lot of approval. He had a lot to prove.
He definitely bought his way out of a few pinches with us.
Still alive?
No, he died last year.
Oh, really? Sorry to hear that.
No, it's not a bad story. I mean, it's obviously bad because he died, but it's the good version of someone dying.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Just dropped dead?
No, see, I think that's the bad version of mine. This was August. He calls and says, this thing in my neck is cancer. I have small cell carcinoma. End of December, he's dead. So I had basically 3 straight months where I knew he was going to die. I got to be of service I took care of all the medical stuff and went through the whole thing with him. And it never got ugly. He kind of got over the finish line without all the gnarly stuff. So all in all, it was as good as I think you can get.
Now, when you say...
And we had some shit to go through, you know.
Well, that's interesting to me. So you have a lifetime.
He got sober. I should add that. You know, he got sober.
He did get
when
sober.
When I was 14. Yeah, 14, he went to treatment and then never relapsed.
Well, it seems
he died 30 years sober or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 25 years sober.
Okay. Well, let's. I think that we should come around to that.
Okay, great.
Because
you want to circle back to that.
Well, in my mind, the story is that, you know, you grow up in this environment. Mm-hmm. Your mom's busting her hump to feed you and your mm-hmm. brother. Well, you got brother and sister?
Yeah, older brother, younger sister.
And your dad's this playboy mm-hmm. car salesman. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine. Pretty cheesy.
I bet your imagination's exactly
about
what he
was.
Yeah.
Because what is it, the late 70s?
He wore Johnny Carson suits. He was balding. He was 300 pounds. He got 300. Tons of ass.
300 pounds.
Yeah, he
pounds.
Smoked Vantage menthols.
Vantage.
Yeah, 100s.
Rough cigarette.
He ate like a maniac, and he was everything you would imagine. He had a huge personality. He fought a lot of guys.
Oh, yeah. So sometimes in the bar...
In sobriety, he got into regular shoving matches at Costco. When I would come visit, he would pick fights at the gas station.
Chip on his shoulder. A little embarrassing.
Yes. Felt very much like everyone was attacking
Scary
him.
Guy, in
yep.
a way.
Yep.
So, all right, so you grow up in this environment. When do you start getting interested in acting?
You know, I wasn't interested in acting per se. I always hear actors in interviews say, like, they knew they wanted to be an actor at 12 in Minnesota or whatever. I just don't get that. I had never met an actor. I don't know why you would have thought you could be an actor. That's fucking preposterous.
But movie star is not...
That would be like, I'm going to assemble the Great Wall of China. That's not what happens in Detroit.
But it's not an unusual fantasy for people to want to be an actor.
I guess. You know, you're right. I do think my wife, who also grew up in Michigan, she somehow had a sense of that. But I knew I was funny. I got in trouble a lot in school. I was the class clown every year.
Were you partying?
No, I wasn't, because I didn't start really going for it till 18. I had 1 year in high school where I experimented, and then the cops immediately got involved. My mom said, you cannot do this, and I honored her wishes for 1 year. Then I graduated.
What did you get busted for?
Oh, my God. I wonder what the statute of limitations are.
It's over.
It's over. Yeah. I can tell the story.
I've had a situation on the show where I had to take something out because we weren't sure there was a statute of limitations.
I think at this point, they would be as tickled that...
That it was you?
Yeah, maybe. I'd like to think so. Because no one got killed or anything.
Let's give it a try.
I was in 11th grade, and I went to a graduation party with 2 friends that were seniors, a guy and a girl that were boyfriend, girlfriend.
Yeah.
We were coming home down a dirt road. We passed this dude's house, and the girlfriend of my friend said, you know, he date raped me, that guy. And we said, we will administer justice now. And our version of that was we were going to give him a lawn job. And to give him a lawn job, but we were in my Mustang, and I...
What does that mean? You go on the lawn with the car, and you...
You just fucking tear everything to shit. Yeah, they lawn wake job. Up in the morning, it looks like a ditch witch went through there. So
this is a guy's parents' house, though, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, at 16, you don't realize you're not hurting the kid. Yeah. You're hurting the dad who's going to deal with it. Anyways, We pull into the driveway. Well, they have a big gate. So my friend's like, just bump it and see if you know it. You can take it down.
Oh, you guys had to have been fucked
up. We're hammered. I mean, we're on the verge of blacking out.
When you're bumping gates.
Absolutely. In your car, which I worked hard to get. It wasn't bought for me. I bought this car.
It was a Mustang?
A Mustang GT. I was super into drag racing. And this car was my pride and joy.
What year was that?
84 GT. This was in 92.
Okay. Fast car.
It was a very fast car. And I am, for some reason, on her word, ramming this gate with my car. Well, I don't do anything to this gate. So we go back to my friend's house,
which is home?
A mile down the road. Yes, they're home. It's like Friday night at 1 and 2 in the morning. So we go to my buddy's house, which is a half mile down the dirt road.
Everyone knows this car, I'm sure.
Everyone certainly knows this car.
Yeah.
We're not even to the meat of this fucking story, which is... We get to his house. He has a monster truck. He has a jacked up mud bogging. I told you, I lived in hillbilly heaven. 44-inch mudder tires, big fucking bumpers.
Yeah.
He goes, in the truck. We're going back. I'm like,
committed to the plan.
We get in the truck. The girlfriend, him driving, now me in the passenger seat. We go back. Well, what we don't anticipate is that all my ramming of the gate woke the whole family up.
Sure.
So he's approaching the gate, and I tell him, don't just give it a nudge. Don't go fall guy. And as I'm saying this, he's full throttle. We ram through this gate, come flying down the driveway. The dad's in the driveway with the flashlight. He dives out of the way. The whole family's on the porch. He proceeds to give this crazy launch up, almost hits the dad.
So he's spinning around on the yard?
Just kicking mud everywhere, driving through flower beds. I mean, ruining this house.
Yeah.
And, God damn it, telling this story makes me think I owe, like, a financial amount.
You might.
Every time I tell a story, this ends up this way. It just happened yesterday. Anyways, so all's going fine. It's a successful lawn job. We're leaving the driveway. It's a pretty long driveway.
It was witnessed.
It was witnessed, but hold on. We're not in trouble yet. Because we came up the driveway with such speed that the dad jumped out of the way. He never could have gotten a license plate. The other folks on the porch, it's 2 in the morning. It's pitch blackout. They wouldn't have got shit. We're coming back down the driveway, and the gate that he hit is now bent towards us. And as we cross that gate, it gets hung up on the back wheel and gets ensnared around the axle. And we come to a grinding stop. And now the dad's on his feet with the flashlight, and he's running towards the truck. And now my friend is putting in reverse and drive, reverse and drive. And I'm like, we are fucked. The dad is going to be opening this door in a second. And by some miracle, he got traction, and we ripped this whole fucking gate out of the ground and drug it down the dirt road. And half a mile down the dirt road, the gate ripped off, just left in the road. We went back to his house, and we said, holy shit, what is our story?
Yeah.
So the story we concocted was...
Someone stole the truck.
We were smart enough to know that the more people that are telling the story, the better the odds that we're going to get caught. So let's eliminate some angles.
So you had to kill the girl.
We killed the girl. We backed over her with the truck.
Yeah.
No, we took me out of the equation. What we said was, we all went to a graduation party. I passed out cold, and they drove me home in my car. And then the girlfriend picked up her car, and then the car pulled back to her house. He's never been home that night. So we proceed with this story. They drop me off at home. Next morning, this is too involved, but my mom's actually having a work function at our house. There's about 20 of her employees
out
front.
The next
morning, and the police come at 7 a.m. to talk to me. They bought our story. Our story was someone joyrided his truck. I leave the keys in it. And I don't know that they bought it as much as maybe they just thought they couldn't prosecute us.
Right.
And we held strong to this story that I don't remember one thing. So my mom's story, I was so dedicated to this lie that I even had to tell her, Mom, I don't remember what happened last night. I went to this party and I passed out in the backseat of my car. And she's like, you're at a stage where you're passing out in the backseat of your car already and the cops are showing up. You cannot do this. You're done. Your experiment with this is over. You are your dad. We know this now. And you can't drink again. And I honored that. That was like end of 11th grade when you would graduate from school. And
what
then
happened with the truck?
And then, so the truck was the whole
it's
bed
done?
Of the truck.
No, but
was
it's done? That was it?
Yes, we all got off scot-free.
Huh. It's funny. The other story that was told on this podcast that I had to remove because I don't think there is a statute of limitations on a felony was, was driven by a girl who said that, something happened.
Something
bad.
Occurred.
Yeah, right.
Right.
that
and add in you're drunk and you're a young man and you're trying to prove how valiant you are.
I love it.
It's not a leap for that situation to happen.
So that was enough to get you sober.
That got me sober for 1 year, and I intended to stay sober, but
so you were a crazy car guy.
I was, yes.
Could you take apart an engine?
Yes, that Mustang, I had rebuilt the engine.
So you know how to do that?
I do. Yep.
Where'd you learn how to do that?
That
seems like a Detroit thing. You should know how to take apart an engine if you live in Detroit and your mom works at GM.
You really ought to. Like, you should be able to rope a fucking horse if you're from Kentucky.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, I just kind of slowly started tinkering with stuff. So like, oh, I'm going to change the carburetor. I think I can do that because I'm looking at it and there's only four bolts and I see that there's three hoses and the fuel line. So if I label this all, I could do anything that I could take apart and then I could put something back
together. You just improvised it? You didn't get a book or nothing?
No, but when it came to the full engine rebuild,
yeah,
a good buddy of mine who I drag raced with, his neighbor was this older guy who like loved helping out the kids and he was super into cars, and that took place in his garage. So he actually taught me how to like torque, you know, the mains and everything, all the important things inside the engine, than just visually looking at it.
You think you could do it again?
Yes. Yeah, I could. It's not that complicated.
But aren't cars more complicated now?
Yeah, they absolutely are. I could do nothing with the computer or fuel management system on a car, but I could take the pistons out or
put a new. Don't you miss the time when cars were simple?
Yeah, well, I own a few that they're simple.
What do you got?
I have a 67 Lincoln Continental that I made a whole movie about called Hit and Run.
Oh, that's right. That was your movie. You directed it and wrote it, and your wife was in it, right?
Yeah, and then my cars were in it. It's my love.
How'd that
love
do?
Story.
I remember seeing the trailers for that.
Well, it depends how you measurement it.
Not with money.
Yeah. It was $1 million movie that made $14 million.
That's good. How much did you get?
Nothing. Less than I would have if I would have.
But you made your money back.
I made my money back. I made money for the people who invested, which was really important to me. I got to make this movie that was just me living out my Smoking the Bandit fantasy.
Uh-huh.
It was my wife in it and all my best friends, and I jumped cars and shit. You know, it was the best.
You did the stunts?
Yes, I did 100% of the stunts. I race off-road cars as well, so I have this silly off-road car. My wife and I jumped other cars. She was in the car as well, Kristen.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So she's in for that.
She's down for it, yeah. Ride or die.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
That's your thing?
Not she's not an adrenaline junkie like me. She could give a shit is what it is. You know, I don't even know that she evaluates how dangerous things are.
If you're going to go, you might as well be together.
Honestly, that was her pitch to me. I was going to do the jump without her and I hired her stunt double to come in that day.
Yeah.
She goes, why is my stunt double here? And I go, well, I don't think you should be in the car when we jump the other cars. She goes, why? If you're a paraplegic, you think I want to push you around in a wheelchair? If we're both getting spinal cord injuries, so we both get pushed around if that's going to happen. I'm like, all right, that's a solid argument.
I don't even know if that's optimism around not thinking you're going to die. Is it more optimistic to think we're both going to be quadriplegics as opposed to dead?
I have to tell you one thing, though, that this is the one thing I wanted to tell you, weirdly, is before I did this stunt, because not only did we jump other cars, but we drove through a barn door. So so we actually broke through a barn door, and directly on the other side was this jump. So there's a huge light difference between the dark barn and then the bright outside day. So you're going to break through wood, and then your eyes are going to try to adjust, and then you got to hit this little ramp, and then you're going to jump other cars. And just prior to that,
did you have a coach on set that knows how to do this shit?
You know, I was supposed to know how to do this shit, but yes, I had a stunt coordinator who knew about ramps. I didn't have ramp knowledge, but they had ramp knowledge. But ultimately, just jump. You know, I had jumped the fucker before, so. But right before the take where we do the stunt, my stunt coordinator leans in. He goes, "How are you feeling? You know, are you nervous?" I go, "No, I'm not. I feel pretty good." He goes, "Really? Out of 10?" And I go, "Well, let's establish what 10 is."
Yeah.
I said, "If 10 is going on stage to do stand up, I feel like I'm at a 5 right now." And that's the God's truth, that for me, jumping cars after bursting through a barn door is right. half as scary as doing stand-up.
It's also like probably a fraction of the time it would take to do stand-up. I mean, once you...
Well, it's considerably shorter.
Right, once you get the car going, you know, you got one bit. Yeah. You got to do one bit.
Yes.
And it's life or death, but you got to do one bit. I understand
It's like the
that.
First time fucking was this car stunt. What the... Whoa, yes, we landed. Yeah. Boom, all within 20
well, no,
seconds.
If it was like the first time, you probably wouldn't have made it to the ramp.
The car would have ran out of gas going up the ramp.
Yeah, just like, oh, I'm done.
Oh, man.
So that's exciting.
I'll never forget the first time I did have sex. I was so young. And
how young?
Really young, seventh grade. And I was wearing a condom.
Really? Good for you.
Yeah. I can't say that pattern
continued.
Continued.
Yeah. They're horrible.
They're. Yeah. Anyways, I finished, you know, in a very short period of time.
Sure. With the condom.
With the condom on. So, but she doesn't know that I've finished. And I'm so young that I'm staying erect.
Yeah. Keep going.
And I just keep going. But I'm confused and I'm a little bored and I don't know what the protocol is. Should I just keep doing this? Exactly.
You don't know what they're supposed to
do. I'll never forget the like 3 minutes of post.
Do they
orgasm.
Do a timeout? You know, like, yes. Done. You made it.
And there was no internet for me to look this up.
Yeah.
I just was like, God, am I supposed to, how long do I do this for?
Yeah.
I hate this.
Well, as you get older, you realize that it's done.
Yes. Well, luckily, your penis quickly makes that decision for you.
We're
as
good.
You age. Yeah.
We're good.
I'm out.
Yeah. All finished. I like that you keep the cars in your life. That's like the most important thing. That's the one thing in your life that stayed steady.
Well, yeah, all this acting business, it really was is a means to an end to buy cars and do all my car stuff. I mean, that's
my
main...
Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I love what I do. Don't get me wrong. It's awesome. But all I really want is all these car things I'm into. Last year, I raced for Lamborghini. I race in the series that is all Lamborghinis.
Is that on a track?
Yes, on a racetrack.
So you race real race cars?
Uh-huh. And I didn't know about this car. I'd never driven one. So Lamborghini lent me one for a week before the race so I'd have some fucking clue about what I was about to drive, right?
It's like a rocket.
So they dropped this car off at 7 p.m., and they're unloading it, and I can't even believe this is happening, right? And Kristen's like, honey, the baby's got a blank, you know, who was doing something.
So you got a new baby.
I had a new baby. Yeah. So I had to go in, and we had to deal with the baby, and then it was, you know, clean the baby, put the baby down, all this baby stuff. Yeah. Then that finally ended, and then it was, honey, we've TiVo'd whatever fucking show we had to watch, right? Yeah. So, okay, the Lamborghini's just sitting in the driveway. Finally, we're laying on the couch. She nods off at about 11:30, and I sneak out from under her.
Yeah,
you
got a nanny.
We're canoodling.
Who's it? Yeah, who's watching the baby now? Baby's sleeping.
Baby's asleep.
Okay, fine. Yeah, so they're both sleeping.
Out cold. Yeah. Okay. So I'm gone.
Yeah.
And I'm walking out of the living room. She goes, "Where are you going?" And I go, "Honey, there's been a fucking Lamborghini here for 5 hours, and I haven't driven it. Well, this is I gotta go." And she's like, "Okay, okay." So at midnight, I came up to Angela's Crest and just went to town for like an hour and a half. And then I had the greatest moment on the way home on, how do you pronounce it?
Like 160?
No, you can't really get up to 160 up. There's not a lot of straightaways, but like 140-ish. Yeah. And so I'm on my way home, and you know, what is it? How do you pronounce your road right here?
Verdugo?
Verdugo.
Yeah.
So I take Verdugo home, and I'm driving, and I can feel a car like speeding up and slowing down, speeding up and slowing down. Oh, geez, what's it? I look over, it's two LAPD guys.
Yeah.
And they're speeding up, slowing down, and I'm like, this is pretty funny. Yeah, they want me to
race?
Yeah, I'm like, I feel like that's what they're asking me to do.
That's what that means, isn't it?
Yes. And I roll down the window, and I go, I just look at them. And then they say, "That thing as fast as your Lincoln?" And I'm like, oh, they've seen Hit and Run. These dudes are down to fucking party. So then I do go ape shit and downshift to first, and I'm out of there. And then they get up to the next light, and they're like, "That thing fucking moves." And I'm like, that's the Academy Award. Like, that, I was in a position where cops were virtually high-fiving me for hauling ass on the city. They goaded me into
it. It's the middle of the night, though, too.
Yeah.
So they knew it was cool.
They knew it was cool. Yeah, I'm not saying they were being irresponsible. Can you imagine the bad version of that where I did, like, put a rabbit around a telephone pole and the dashboard cam of them basically calling me a pussy if I don't floor it?
And then they got to take a ride around the block before they find you wrapped around the pole. And they got... And they're going to sit there and say, like, I'm glad you're okay, but they're whose story they're going to believe, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to try to reconstruct what happened.
That's right.
Based on the skid marks. Yeah.
So, all right. So you graduate high school.
So I had a sense that I was funny and I wanted to do stand up. And I had a couple friends that did stand up in Detroit. And but
do
I was
know
just,
them?
I was, no.
They're not around?
They're not around.
Yeah.
I was just too scared. And so I thought, if I move all the way to California, that, you know, commitment will force me to do it.
It's interesting that first time, you know, where, you know, that the jump.
Yeah.
Between I want to do it and I'm going to do it.
And what's so weird is what was less scary to me was moving all the way across the country and living by myself as opposed to just going up on stage in Detroit.
You're going, I got to get it. If I'm going to do this,
I don't want a single one human being to know me in an 80 mile.
Did you take the Mustang out?
No. At that point, I still own the Mustang, but I left it there. All I took with me was a motorcycle. I had a Suzuki 600.
You rode a bike across country.
I did not drive the bike across country. It's too long and boring, but my family did car shows for General Motors, and we had all these traveling events that were at racetracks. I put the bike in a van.
What part of your family?
My mother, who started as a janitor at General Motors, ended up building this huge business by the time I was in high school.
That's a great story.
It's the greatest story ever.
How did that happen?
She was a janitor, then she was in fleet management at the Proving Grounds where they design all the cars in Milford, Michigan, and then she started hosting these hospitality days for the family members of GM, and she did such a good job that when she got another job at an ad agency, they asked her to come back and still put on this show for them, and then they asked, do you want to do this show with all these car journalists? She said yes, and then that turned into another job, and then all of a sudden she had four shops around the country that managed their whole publicity fleet. She did these huge events for all the car magazine journalists who would write stories about cars. And so my life from 14 to 28, I worked for her and just was on the road, like going from racetrack to racetrack and
driving cars,
mostly washing cars. But yes, I did get to do a
you lived
good
around
deal.
Cars.
I lived around cars. Yeah. I even had a stepdad at one point that was an engineer on the Corvette.
Really?
Yes.
How long was he around?
He was in the picture for about 2.5 years, I think.
That's okay, run, huh?
For her, pretty good. Yeah.
And what did you learn from that guy?
You know, he was a real type A asshole, but I did pick up a lot from him. One, he was crazy smart, and he really did instill in me this weird thing that I still have, which is I had lost two retainers under his tutelage.
Yeah.
And he said to me, he used to regularly stop me and go, hey, right now, what are you doing? And I go, oh, I'm going to make a sandwich. He's like, okay, but are you thinking about eating the sandwich? Are you thinking about opening the drawer and then grabbing the knife and then getting the thing out? He goes, I want you in life to be thinking a few steps ahead of what you're doing. And he'd constantly call out to me, what are you doing? What are the steps? And it did kind of form this process by which I do think about things before I do them or before I tell. And I notice a lot of people don't do that.
Instead of thinking about eating the sandwich, you start with the
bread. Construction of a sandwich and maybe, is it a good sandwich to eat this time of day? I don't know, just being conscious, really.
Yeah, I
probably.
And you had to throw all that out for Idiocracy. It was good that he gave you that that information because you knew what to remove.
That's right.
For that role.
Yeah, I knew the null hypothesis of all my.
But no, but I guess people either naturally think that way or they don't.
I didn't think that way, and he was a very methodical engineer, and he was crazy intelligent, and he did kind of help. My mom was the opposite. She was very artistic and just she did make
there's
nine
no
things
way
at
would,
once, and maybe she was trying to make a sandwich but she ends up with spaghetti. You know,
there was no way that was going to work then.
Fuck no.
Now he tried to wrangle her, I guess,
and she's a strong
he left, you know, just destroyed and pummeled.
He did. I think it was a real wake-up call to him too. I think a lot of people were shocked by, like, wait a minute, she left me, what the hell.
Yeah, I'm telling you,
but
man.
He was an improvement of the one before who was just really the worst.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
What was that guy? Worst.
That guy was a coke addict and got physical with everyone and just a real sweetheart of a guy.
Really?
Well, yeah. When she met him, he had two jobs. The day they got married, he quit both jobs. The only thing productive he did was bowl, and he would occasionally be in arm wrestling tournaments.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And he was,
violent and terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Just a terrible human being.
And you were how old?
This is very key to the whole story. I was This started when I was 5 and ended when I was 7.
Yeah.
Or 6 to 8. Either 5 to 7 or 6 to 8.
Yeah.
Because my little sister, that's her dad. We have different dads.
Oh, really?
So that's how I would measure
So she was
time.
Married to him.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was a violent guy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Physically abusive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's the root of a lot of my, I think.
What else?
What are my issues that stem from that?
Well, yeah.
I will fight anybody. I will fight absolutely anybody.
So he just beat the shit.
You could bring a guy in here that we would both look at each other and go, this guy's going to fucking destroy you. And I go, you're right, but I'm swinging. No one will ever not.
And it was because he beat the shit out of you.
I saw him hit my mom before, and I was young, and I couldn't do anything, and I felt very emasculated by that, and like I thought I was her knight in shining armor. Like I thought I would rise to the occasion, and I was paralyzed by witnessing that.
And he wasn't sexually abusive?
No.
Oh, good.
No.
Just a fucking asshole.
Yeah. He was too busy fucking ripping lines. If he could have got hard, maybe he would sexually abuse somebody.
Well, no, I mean, I think that's interesting that she goes from you know, just another one step worse than your old man.
Uh-huh.
And then she gets with the dude who's a complete control freak, which is usually what alcoholics invent. Like the children of alcoholics are control freaks.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And then she got one of those, and he and she couldn't deal with that. I can't imagine.
And by the way, it's all like
she's still
a different shade of gray. Like his weird type A control shit. I think. Look, we all know it's like you're treating some inside feelings with some outside stuff.
Sure.
So his way of trying to regulate was through this regimented, crazy worldview he had. So,
right.
I don't think it's much different. You're still living with someone who you're in their jet wash the whole time.
Their jet wash.
Right.
So from your dad and the first stepdad, you learned how to be a crazy out of control ass kicker.
Uh-huh.
And then from that guy, you learned how to make a sandwich and think it through.
And probably, look, he raced motorcycles. He explained an engine at some point.
The Corvette guy.
The Corvette guy. Yeah. Again, I cannot put too high a point on how brilliant this guy was. He had like 9 inventions while he was at GM. He invented a version of rack and pinion steering. I mean, he's really, really crazy smart guy.
Oh, that's great.
Ran marathons and shit. Wow. Oh my God, I got to tell you the best part about this whole thing. My mom hadn't seen him in forever, and she called me not too long ago, maybe 5 years ago, and she goes, well, I ran into blank at the airport. I go, no kidding, what was he doing? She said, he was on his way to a roller skating contest. And I go, what? Yeah, apparently he's in this competitive roller skating dance thing.
What?
Yes, what? This is a dude who raced motorcycles and ran marathons.
What happened?
I don't know.
Did he come
I don't
out?
Think maybe since my mom left him, she drove him to this roller skating pastime. What a weird... It's what you would pray happens to your ex if you don't like them. Like, fucking hope they're...
Roller skating dancing.
They're forced to dance on roller skates to get by without me.
All right, so you leave Michigan. You take your bike. To do stand-up.
Right, I come all the way out here to do stand-up, and guess what? I don't do stand-up. I'm still afraid when I get here. And I find out about the Groundlings.
Yeah.
And so I auditioned to start taking classes at the Groundlings with... Never acted in my life. Wasn't in, you know, high school theater.
How'd you know about the Groundlings?
I had a friend who I had met in Santa Barbara who had done it.
Yeah.
And he was the one guy in LA I knew that was in comedy. Did you know Kareem El-Safi?
No.
To me, he was fucking Jim Carrey for having...
Right.
And he said, you should go to the Groundlings. Like, you're pretty quick-witted, and improv's probably a thing for you. So I went in an audition. It was the first time I'd ever acted was in that audition. And then I got in, and then I went through the levels, as you do, which take years. And also, in the meantime, I went to Santa Monica College and West LA College, and then I transferred to UCLA. So I was going to UCLA and Groundlings
studying
at the same
what?
Time. Anthropology.
Where did that come from?
I've always been really interested in primates.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What?
And since I knew I wasn't going to... Look, if I went to college, my mom would pay my rent.
Yeah.
So I didn't really have to major in something that was career-oriented. I could just take what interested me. And I went to like an intro to anthropology class, and I saw dudes doing peyote and, you know, weird drugs down. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is for me.
Yeah.
You're studying basically weirdness.
Yeah.
And so I did that. And then
what'd you learn?
I learned a ton. I really learned, I really processed the world through that lens, through the anthropological lens, which is, in this country, is a culturally relative approach to just evaluating things.
Sure. I mean, like, so.
And it's huge. It really had.
The layers of history and evolution.
Well, what they do right out of the gates in an intro to anthro class, if anyone's going to go to college, it's really worth taking. It's really fun to challenge yourself because they'll hit you right out of the gates with some things that seem so obvious.
Right.
Infanticide. Is infanticide right or wrong? Is there any way that infanticide wouldn't be wrong? Well, let's look at this. And what they basically teach you is that you can't learn anything if you're in the judgment business.
Right.
If your goal is to lay judgment on these people you're studying, you won't really learn anything about them. All you'll do is categorize them as something.
Right. Okay.
And
right.
So there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
You have to enter it with, they're not good or bad. They're just this culture. And to learn everything about the culture, we just have to listen and document.
Right.
We're not here to say whether it's right or wrong.
Unbiased.
Yes. And in doing
objective.
That,
objective,
you actually find out that what they're doing isn't as crazy inhumane
for
as you
their
thought,
particular,
for their culture.
Right.
It came to be for a reason and it served a point. Maybe they've passed that point, but it's not, they're not evil. There's, you know.
Right. Necessity.
So
adaptation.
It really is a cool way to think of things and to process the world, which is like, just slow down, just listen. I'm more interested in what happens than I am about like, this dude's a dick or she's evil or she's a bitch or he's an, you know, asshole, whatever.
And realize that infanticide in some situations is okay.
Well, weirdly, you'll hear actors talk about this that are actually good actors that have studied. You can't approach a character saying they're good or bad. Like good, really good actors who play villains will tell you, well, they weren't playing a villain.
They were playing a guy.
They're playing a guy who was doing bad shit, you know, or whatever, which is largely true.
Yeah.
Right. I made an observation about a good friend the other day, and she said, you think I'm an asshole now. And I said, I really don't. I think we all have a big old list of character defects. Sure. I happen to mention one of yours, but I don't think that makes you good or bad. I've got a zillion.
Yeah.
We have a fucking little bag of crappy things we're trying to get rid of. But you're not bad.
Well, so that I guess then because I speak the same language as you do, that the sort of anthropological foundation on some level had an effect on your sobriety.
It did,
because you know you were able to fill in some of the gaps, and look at something like character defects or like resentment or like.
And I was just open to the culture of AA. Weirdly,
right.
I wasn't threatened by. I didn't walk into it going like they're a cult, and I wasn't afraid I'd get sucked into a cult. Just like you could go study Sub-Saharan African people, and I'm not going to necessarily believe in witchcraft afterwards.
Right.
I can submerge myself and feel very safe that I'm not going to lose myself.
Well, I think that's a fortitude of character that you know that's a blessing, and I think it comes from driving fast.
I do too. You got to learn to make. But I will say the addiction in the driving fast is very related because I think. Being able to think calmly in mass chaos is like the best.
Have you rolled cars?
I have not thrown a car away. I have been in a very bad rollover, but I wasn't driving.
Mm.
And that was in high school. I was a kid. Kid fell asleep. And I was in the back seat.
Both live?
We both lived.
He's okay?
Shockingly. Yeah, he was fine too. But rolled many, many times. Ended up upside down, car flat. My first thought was, oh my God, I'm going to be pulling him out of this car dead. There's no way he lived. I don't know how I lived.
Yeah.
He was fine too. We were both fine. It doesn't make any sense. In fact, I walked around for about a week after it going, did I die? I have this weird theory that like when I do die, I'll be like, oh, I died. And then you get to heaven. And they're like, oh, that's so cute. You think this is the first time you died. You died like 95 times.
Oh,
that's not how it works. It's like lives in a video game, maybe.
That just fucked my brain up.
Because it could happen.
Who knows?
Those situations. Ugh. Like I'm admittedly saying I'm an ex-addict, but I've had a couple of situations where I went out on Friday. I came to. I thought worst case scenario, it was Sunday.
Yeah.
It was fucking Tuesday. I looked at the box of pills I had, and I looked at this I had, and I added all those things up, and I said, a human can't live through all that. And it's all gone, and no one came over.
Yeah.
And it's a terrifying thing, I'm saying now with a smile.
Yeah.
But at that time, you're like, you can't take all that stuff and still wake up. And I did. So probably I didn't. Maybe on that time I didn't.
Well, maybe you just know how to pace yourself even when you're fucking not even.
I'll never forget that time in particular I'm talking about. Just trying to reconstruct that
in a blackout that lasts almost a week.
It lasted like 3 days. Yeah, and my ribs in particular killed. I'm like, why are my ribs hurt so bad? Like, yeah. I feel like someone hit me with a baseball bat. Hours and hours later, I go downstairs into my carport. My Harley is on its side.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I have this kind of memory of I was at one point going to go for a motorcycle ride. I didn't make it out of my parking spot. I tipped it over, and it was a touring bike. It's 880 pounds with gas in it. And I tried to pick it up for hours to the point where I pulled a rib out. And I just looked at that thing, and I just started crying because I thought, thank God I didn't get on that thing. Oh, my God.
Thank God it fell over.
Yes.
All right, so you go through Groundlings.
Yeah, we go through Groundlings. I get into the Sunday Company. I've now been in L.A. for over 5 years, probably.
Yeah.
Again, I'm auditioning for those tampon commercials.
Yeah.
It's a lot of competing companies.
And where the drugs fit in, or that wasn't until later?
No, I was very lonely when I moved to California. My first year was in Santa Barbara, weirdly, and that year was very lonely, and that's where I really learned to drink by myself and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And then I came to LA and I started doing coke. I had a neighbor below me that smoked crack, and I smoked crack with him. And then
it's always good to find your community.
Absolutely. A fisherman always spots another fisherman at sea. And, so I found people. Yeah. But I was, you know, pretty functional because I was still going to college and getting good grades and stuff, but my Thursdays through Sundays for years were just a real blurry mess.
Running around Hollywood?
Running around Hollywood, failing as an actor pretty miserably for 8 years, and it starting, all my friends from home are buying ski boats and fucking houses with decks and stuff, and I am in the same one-bedroom apartment in Santa Monica.
Smoking crack
tipped over with my Hawaiian neighbor who just got out of prison. I ran that for years, for like a decade.
You're in the Sunday Company, though.
I was in the Sunday Company.
Who was in your crew?
Well, I'll tell you, I was in a comedy troupe while we went through the ground, like while we were all waiting for classes. This was a pretty neat moment for me, which was like 2 Academy Awards ago, or maybe 3. So my group was Melissa McCarthy, who was nominated for Bridesmaids. Tate Taylor, who directed The Help that year, and that was nominated. Nat Faxon, who had written The Descendants that year, that was nominated. And there's someone else. And this is a group Jim Rash wasn't in that group, but I was very good friends with Jim.
Yeah.
But this was just a group of 8 people that we would rent these theaters. No one would come. And I was like, fucking A, half of them are at the Academy Awards right now, and they're nominated. Oh, Octavia. Octavia Spencer also would do sketches in our group.
Wow.
And it was pretty mind-blowing. And although I'm not at the Academy Awards, I'm in a nice house watching the Academy Awards, which is mind-blowing to me. So it was just as...
That's a pretty amazing
crew. It really was. It was both inspiring and also disillusioning. I was like, oh, all the previous Academy Awards I watched as a kid... Those people were just in comedy troupes too. Like, there's nothing special going on. You eventually get there, I guess, if you keep pining away at
it.
No, you don't. Yeah, but you can. I don't know.
But I mean, so when did your first break come?
Okay, so Punk'd was my first break. I had not made a dollar acting. I had booked an AMP industrial buyout commercial that played in an AMPM gas station in the TV in the corner,
right.
In which I played a hot dog as a harmonica, which was like the lowest point of my career.
Yeah.
And I was completely broke. And then they were holding auditions for this show, Punk'd. And the premise was you go fuck with people and you have to be good at improv. And I thought, I'm not afraid to get into some shit. And I can improv. If I can't book this show, I honestly need to reevaluate what I'm doing.
Did they tell you you can't kick anyone's ass?
They did. As Ashton and I became friends, he said, you know, you can't. If these guys, someone gets physical with you, you're just going to have to kind of take it. Which... Weirdly enough, so you didn't watch the show, but definitely the most famous bit ever on the show of all the years was the punking of Justin Timberlake. And it was what made it so viral, I guess, was that he had cried at one point in it. And at the end of that bit, when Ashton comes out and you're on Punk'd and blah, 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 and everyone's celebrating.
So funny. It's basically candid camera.
It's all it is.
Yeah.
But with celebrities, so it's...
Yeah. Alan Funt was a genius.
Yes.
Yeah.
the bit's over, the cameras are off, and he keeps saying, Timberlake, he's like, yeah, man, I was about to fucking punch you. I was like, mm-hmm, all right. Dude, I was for real, man. I was like, I was just about to fucking punch you out. And I was like, okay, that's number two. I'm thinking, how many times can I hear this dude in his golf outfit? He's literally wearing a golf outfit. Yeah. Tell me he can punch me out before I'm just not going to be able to handle it. And God bless Ashton, he goes, when were you going to punch him, before or after you were crying? And I was like, oh my God, thank God. I think he saw me starting to get in the red and was like, I got to let some steam off this. But that was hard for me. Just he was saying it over and over again, and I just had to kind of take it.
He was just trying to make
it. Now it wouldn't be that hard for me. At that point, it was really hard for me to
When was the last time you got in a fist fight?
When Kristen and I were maybe a year into dating, so an actual hardcore fist fight on the street was like 6 years ago on Sunset.
Over what?
We were driving to a kind of a fancy dinner. I was dressed up, which I never am. We were driving down Sunset, and right in front of Chateau Marmont, there's not a crosswalk there.
Yeah.
This dude starts crossing the road. He's got plenty of time. We all have plenty of time. And by the way, I applaud people who cross the road not in a crosswalk. But when you do that, you got to get across the fucking road. You're not in a crosswalk.
Yeah.
He starts doing that thing as I'm getting closer where he's deciding that I should be slowing down, even though he's got plenty of room.
Yeah.
So now he's really taking his time, and I'm not slowing down. And as I pass him, he steps onto the double yellow line, and he throws a 30-ounce drink at my windshield. And it hits the windshield in a way that I think the windshield has exploded.
Right, because of the ice.
Because of the ice, it makes a noise, and I can't see. You know, everything is just... I thought the windshield broke.
Yeah.
And so I am pulling the emergency brake and exiting the car before it stopped. And I'm running across Sunset. He is running away from me. He turns when we get to the sidewalk. There's that newsstand there. Do you know that newsstand? Yeah. He turns. He dives for my legs like he's a grappler. I kick him in the face. He falls backwards. I get him in a headlock. I pick him up. This is not a lie. There's records in the LAPD for
this. Kristen's watching this.
She's watching it. We've not been dating long. And as I have him in a headlock and I'm about to unleash, he's screaming, I'll fucking sue you. I know who you are. And I look at the newsstand and there's about six people who missed the whole throwing the shit at the car. All they see is me beating the shit out of a guy on the sidewalk. It's very incriminating looking.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I was like, I need to get out of here right now.
Yeah.
I dropped him.
And you'd already done what? Punked or what? Where were you? No, you'd already
this
done.
This is 5 years ago. I'm on Parenthood. I'm on NBC.
Oh, you're already doing it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I've done 20 movies and I'm on network television.
Yeah.
And I get back in the car, and Kristen is very, very anti-violence.
Yeah.
Appropriately so, as everyone should be. This is a big theme in Hit and Run, by the way. So get back in the car. I'm expecting her to really give it to me. And she's such a good person. She knows now's not the time. We're driving. It's just dead quiet.
Yeah.
And I go, I think I may have broke my calf because I'm feeling like a huge egg come up on my calf.
Yeah.
And we got to the restaurant. I'm kind of limping into this. It was the Soho House before it was the Soho House. It was like this one-time thing. They were making it that. And we sit down at the table. She goes away, and I think she's going to the bathroom. She comes back. She's got them to give me a bag of ice, and she hands me under the table a bag of ice, and I start icing my broken leg, which wasn't broken. But I thought that was a real show of her character.
And what happened?
That she kind of put... She let me have it later, but she knew to like take care of me first and then later tell me how inappropriate the whole thing was.
What the fuck is wrong with you talking?
Yeah, why would you be out of the car while it's still moving?
And was there legal repercussions?
There was. I knew there would be trouble. I mean, when the guy's yelling, I'll sue you in the middle of it, you know there's going to be trouble. And I got a call from an LAPD officer, and I told her the whole story. And she said, well, you know, what you did is a misdemeanor, and what he did is a felony. If you throw something at a moving car in California, that's a felony. And I said, oh, that's great. Tell him I will press charges against him for the felony unless he drops the misdemeanor charges. She goes, that's great. We're thinking that'll be a great plan. She calls back in like 3 days. I talked to him. He doesn't care. He said, go ahead and press the felony charges. My assumption is that he needs to get a criminal case for the civil case to really work out.
Right.
He's probably dealing with a lawyer who's like, you got to first get this criminal thing going.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh my gosh. He goes, all I can do is give the DA this report I've taken, and he'll ultimately decide whether or not to, or she will decide whether to prosecute or not. I'm like, oh my God, okay. So about a month and a half goes by where I'm certain I'm going to lose my house over this dingbat throwing a fucking Coke at my windshield. But I get called a month and a half later, and she goes, I have great news. The DA's not going to prosecute. And then everything just unraveled. He never did sue me civilly. Thank God. Yeah.
All right, so now... At that point, you're sober, and I like what. So you've been on this network gig for a while. It's good.
Uh-huh, yeah,
doing a lot of movies here and there.
Uh huh.
You're respected. You're a good. You're a go-to guy for some people.
It's becoming that. Yeah, I'm becoming predictable.
That sounds bad.
Well, you know, it's an interesting business, especially comedy. So much of it is cachet and perception, and I've done good things and I've done bad things, and depending on how loud the bad thing was, that'll slow you down for a little while, and then you'll do a good thing.
But you're definitely in the game.
I'm in the game, and you know what? I've definitely gotten through some harder stretches, and now I feel like those are kind of over. I think now finally the voice in my head that says you're going to be penniless and you'll never work again is a whisper now. I'll probably work in this business.
You'll do all right. Yeah. And you're working now.
Mm-hmm.
And the show's popular.
I'm currently writing and I'm going to direct Chips at Warner Brothers. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So.
And you're going to be in it.
I'm going to be John Baker. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's an amazing thing.
How long have you been sober?
It'll be 10 years in September.
And what was that bottom like? When did that happen? Was that after the 3-day rib?
No, I have so many stories that end with, and then I continue to get fucked up for another year. But no, that wasn't that was a bottom. I think people traditionally think of it as in terms of a bottom.
No,
I had
like
11.
Yeah, yeah.
And I tried to get sober a dozen times, and I could put together 2 months here, 3 months here. I would always get sober for movies.
Yeah.
I cared more about that.
Right.
And in between movies is when it got really dangerous. And then basically what happened, as Favreau was in here, right? So I did this movie, Zathura, that he directed
right
after Elf. And I knew I had to get sober to do that movie. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to go to Hawaii and have this one last week vacation where... I chose Hawaii specifically because I thought, well, there's no cocaine in Hawaii.
Yeah.
So it'll be safe for me to go.
What are you talking
about? It just seems so far from everywhere.
Okay, sure. They can't get it there.
That was my assumption.
That's your drug logic.
I was honestly debating between
going... There's
probably
more coke in Hawaii than you could ever imagine.
No, it was hard to find, but I found it.
Okay.
What I did is I didn't underestimate the amount of coke there. I underestimated my willingness to search it out and find it.
Uh-huh.
But so I went there with a friend, and a couple of things happened, but I got in a car accident with this local dude.
What island?
On Kauai.
On Kauai, the nicest
island. I'm there with
one street in Kauai.
Everyone's a newlywed except for my buddy and I from Detroit who are there to get fucked up.
Right.
And, you know.
Where were you staying at the...
Some place I got on Orbitz was like airfare and the hotel and everything.
You did that?
Absolutely, I did that.
You didn't
that.
Just go to the one up on the north?
No.
That beautiful place?
I would now, but this was...
Was it Prince
this
whatever?
This was 10 years ago. Right. I'd done 3 movies. I was still living in a one-bedroom apartment, stockpiling every penny because I thought I would never work.
Right, okay.
So I was still looking
budget.
For bargains.
Yeah.
I think the whole trip was a grand.
See, were you at like the Hyatt?
Yes, I was like at a Hyatt or something. By the airport. Just, you leave the airport, 5 minutes later, you're at the place. There's chickens running around all over the
There's roosters everywhere.
Roosters everywhere.
Yeah. Like on Poipu Beach or whatever.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Such a visceral memory. So we're at a bar. We're drinking with locals. I've already done Punked. I'm kind of popular among that crew.
Yeah.
The first 2 days at the bar, it's really cool. I'm there. The third day, I start realizing it's worn off. They're going to kill us.
Yeah.
It's not fun that these howlies are drinking at this local bar. But I met a guy who said, yeah, I know where to get coke. Okay, great. Let's go. I go with him and his girlfriend. We're driving. It's raining. This guy's driving way too fast. He's got his shirt off. He has a beer between his legs. I'm in the process of telling him, you got to slow down and turn on the radio when we go through a left-hand turn. He loses control. We spin. We hit a guardrail. Cars are fucking flying off the road to avoid us. We somehow end up going straight. We drive out of it. He thinks it's great that he's like, I fucking drove out of that, bro. I'm like, fucking slow down. I got the radio down now all the way. We come into the next town. Cop passes us, sees the smashed up back end, flips a U-turn. We pull into a gas station. We're getting pulled over. I'm looking at myself in the rearview mirror. I'm in a cutoff T-shirt and a cowboy hat. I don't know anyone in the car. The cops are coming up, and I'm like, I've been in Hawaii 3 days. This is where we're at.
Where's Ashton Kutcher when you need him?
Exactly. I need him to come up and tell the cops they've been punked.
Yeah.
So they let this guy go. They make the girl drive, who's just as drunk as all of us. We continue on to the drug house. It's not coke. It's crystal meth. Ugh. I buy it anyways.
Sure. Why not stay up for a few days?
Absolutely. So we go, and me and my buddy smoke crystal meth for 3 days. I get to a point where I get that feeling where you're like, I got to get this out of my body. It's toxic. Yeah. I've been up for 3 days. I need to go for a jog. I jog on the beach in front of the Hyatt with the roosters going, and it is 100 degrees, and I jog probably 3 miles. The fact that I didn't die, I came back to the room. I sweat for like 4 hours. Still not the low point. Go out the night before we fly back. I get so drunk, so on everything, and I had a layover, again, because this is a bargain flight. I have a layover between Kauai and LA in San Francisco. And I'm at a bar in San Francisco because I'm so physically sick, I cannot make the flight from San Francisco to LA unless I get at least 4 Jack and Diets in me. So I'm sitting at this bar in the corner of the bar because I'm so afraid someone from AA is going to see me, because up to that point, I had 3 months.
Yeah,
I'm sitting at this on a stool in San Francisco, convinced that everyone walking by is an AA and knows me. I am staring.
That's the best speed by, you know, like usually the paranoia that comes with staying up and fucking your brain up is not the good kind. Like you're literally like, you think you're going to get caught by AA5.
Yes, exactly.
So you were aware.
Oh my God. So the actual moment was, here I was, I was about to start this Favreau movie. I had just finished Idiocracy with one of my heroes, Mike Judge. Yeah. I was in a movie that came out a month before that was a hit. And I was sitting in the corner of this bar, literally hiding, and I had accomplished all these goals I had and dreamed about for 10 years and worked to get, and I was afraid to just be in public at this fucking airport. And I was looking in the mirror
there.
Oh,
you're at the airport, right.
I was looking in the mirror, and I was like, this is not it. This is not, you're doing this wrong. This is really... You're afraid to be you, and you've gotten everything you wanted. It was just very, very profound. So I got sober for the movie, which was easy. I did that before. What was hard is when the movie wrapped in 3 months, I said, I can't do it again. If I have another stretch like the Hawaii trip, I'm not going to make it to the next movie. And I was able to get over that hump, that three-month hump that was so elusive to me. And then it's been pretty easy since then.
Well, that's great, man.
Yeah.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
Solid.
Yeah.
And now it's been 10 years.
It's been 10 years. And you know, how long have you been sober?
Let me 15.
Yeah, so I bet, I would assume you had the same trajectory of me, which is the first 5 years of just like, just being sober. Like that's the only goal.
I'm learning new things now, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you know, at five, you know, they say you get your mind back or whatever. I guess I did. But then it took me another 5 to fuck up a marriage or two and to destroy other things.
Yeah.
And then like even this last 5 has been hard. But like it's taken me a long time to get humble and to really sort of, and also to say to myself like, all right, well maybe these, like I held on to a lot of character defects because I felt they defined me.
Me too.
And I still do.
Yeah.
And they've become, you know, they've become very specific. You know, I know exactly what they are and how they're fucking me.
Yeah.
And the obstacle becomes very clear. And a lot of people get it sooner, but I'm stubborn.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the anger issue, which is just not, it's not cool.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and I've got other problems too. I got I got the codependent thing too. So I'm like, I'm just trying to, because I know I'm probably not going to have kids. I don't know if I can hold a relationship together. I fucked a lot of them up, but it's a two-way street. I get it. But at some point, you got to be able to live with yourself around those last few defects.
Yeah.
Like, how do I let that go?
Well, what's tricky about that is, for all the people who are not any awareness of this program, you know, you do figure out your list of character defects, and then you start asking for them to be removed. But here's the tricky part. It seems very simple. You just say, please take these away from me. I don't need them anymore. But in reality, you might not be being sincere about that. And that's the truth. There are 3 still that I have that I ask to be removed that I know I'm bullshitting. I still want them because I got nothing left. I kind of like, I feel like that'll be the last spice of life that I forego.
Well, that's the weird thing about the program is it's one of the weird kind of like suggestions or you know, it's when you're ready.
Yeah, yeah,
and it's one of the only areas in the program where you know you can't drink, yeah. and you should do these other things.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the goal is not to drink, but how do you want to live a quality of life that, you know, you have acceptance and happiness? And you do have a choice. It's like, you know, when you're
ready. Yeah, you're allowed to do it wrong. That's sure. the beauty of it. And I would never have gotten with it.
And there's no sort of like, you have to get rid of these character defects. It's really like, you know, if you
want to be happier or not happier.
Right.
Yeah.
So how did
And you can know things intellectually. Like, I understood all of these things
sure.
right out of the gates. Intellectually, I get it. But you have to actually emotionally feel it. You have to actually have some good, not consequences. You have to have some positive things happen from making the right choice a few times
yeah.
before you start believing what everyone's telling you.
Now,
for me.
Now, but I know that, like, being in the situation you're in, I know you're outspoken about being stalked by people with cameras.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
and dealing with anger has got to be, because you sound like you got a pretty good trigger.
Yeah, I do. But you know, the one thing that keeps me from, I have gotten into it with the photographers on a couple of occasions. I've gotten real lucky a couple times, but by and large, I'm pretty good. And here's why. I hate them so much. I refuse to give them what they want. I know the ultimate loss will be that I lose my shit and punch one of these guys, and then they get paid, and yeah. it's a story.
Right.
Or like when I'm walking out of the airport and they have the video camera and they're like, they're bringing up something embarrassing. I know that if I acknowledge it in the slightest, it will get on TMZ. But yeah. if I just pretend I don't hear it, there's nothing to show. So
right.
it's my ultimate victory I'm aiming for that keeps me from the immediate
road.
Victory.
The high road.
But it does get tricky with a kid. Like all that stuff was semi-manageable for me. But then when there's a baby involved, that's when it got. That's when I started getting kind of vocal about it all.
And what are your feelings?
Well, my wife and I started this thing called No Kids Policy, and we've urged all the consumers to stop buying magazines or consuming media that has little kids that are stalked, that are the children of celebrities, that aren't actors, that haven't chosen this
And how's
life.
That?
Shockingly well. I didn't think we'd get one ounce of movement, and the list of people that have agreed to is staggering, like Us Weekly, People Magazine, Entertainment
oh, really?
Tonight, Access Hollywood, Perez Hilton, Just Jared, a ton, primarily through my wife, her really. It all started with, we had done a really good job at keeping the baby.
Kristen Bell.
Kristen Bell's my wife. By some miracle. And we have a one-year-old baby. And we had done a great job for 9 months. They live at the end of our driveway, the paparazzi.
Yeah.
For 9 months, we were able to keep her covered, and there was no photos of her.
Right.
And then one day, we were at a friend's house in the Deep Valley. We had no idea we had been followed. We came out. I was holding her, and there were pictures all over the internet. And I got really bummed out about it. And I didn't really know what to do. And I'm also aware of what a low-level problem it is in the world. So I'm a little hesitant to speak out about it because yeah. I know people will go, fuck you, you're rich, and who
yeah.
gives a shit?
Yeah.
And I certainly heard that reaction on Twitter. But besides that, I decided I'm going to tweet about it. So I tweeted about it like, hey, maybe boycott these magazines. Then Kristen tweeted about it. She has a bazillion followers. That kind of got some attention. So then the Huffington Post said, would you like to write an op-ed article about this? So I did. Then the op-ed article got a lot of traction. Then the Today Show called and said, would you guys like to talk about it? So we did. Cut to then she sits down with all these different media outlets and we do a bunch of interviews all over town. And then all these people adopt this policy. There's still some outstanding people, but we've gotten a ton of movement.
The ones that are a little better than the ones that have absolutely no moral compass.
Exactly. Right. And that's what, you know, I get all the arguments against it, but the bottom line is like, sure, I signed up for this, although I don't know that I signed up for this. I can concede to the fact that I have a lot of great quality of life things, so if that's what I got to deal with, great. But,
we
don't live in a society where we punish people's children for their parents.
Right, but even then, it's like, I don't know how you guys deal with it. I mean, you know, I don't have any real celebrity. There's no one at the end of my driveway.
I'd love to start if you're open to it.
Yeah, you want
camping out?
Yeah, sure. That'd be fine. If just Dax Shepard was camping out in my driveway with a camera,
yeah.
I'd probably pose for you.
Okay, good.
But
let me know when you're going
to
go jogging.
But just to have to accept that like every day.
Well, here's the ultimate fucking test. So okay, a part of our program is like acceptance is the answer to all my yeah. problems. And this is the number one thing I have an almost impossible time accepting, that yeah. I have to accept that they're going to follow my baby around or that they're going to push other little kids out of the playground to photograph her. I just can't accept that.
Yeah.
Know?
Well, that's I don't think you should. I think it's right. It's, you know, we, you know, righteous indignation, if it is truly righteous, is something that you're entitled to.
To hang on to.
Well, I mean, whether it's going to, you know,
yield any results. Yeah.
Well, not even yield any results. I mean, the idea is that we can't afford it because, you know, that type of resentment is going to fuel the discomfort that could lead to drinking.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is, I mean, we can't neuter ourselves completely. If you have a just cause that you believe in, it has to be okay.
It would lead to more discomfort if I did absolutely nothing.
Right. It seems that in terms of your anger, that the period of time that you had with your father at the end, did that get you closure around anything?
Yeah. First and foremost, I've listened to you, so I know more about you than you know about me.
Yeah.
And I know that we have a lot of similarities, but I don't really have an anger issue. I was a kid who fought, but more for the, like, yeah, I'll do this.
Yeah.
I wasn't picking a lot of fights.
Right.
And I wasn't...
You got a hair trigger, though, right?
I will fight.
Yeah.
But I'm not like, crazy angry.
Right.
Anger's... It is on my... I have that issue, but it's at a 4.
Right.
It's not
sure.
at a 10. It's
right.
not something I really wrestle
right.
too much with.
Right.
I have
right.
fought with a smile on my face
sure.
a few different times.
Yeah.
So... You know, it's not eating me up. But the stuff with my dad was, I don't know. Your dad was a doctor, right?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
I guess.
He is. Okay. You know, I was very disappointed in my dad. He wasn't the one I wanted. I was super judgmental of him because I have the exact list of character defects he does. And I hate them about myself. So, of course, I hate them about him. And he's the asshole who gave them to me. So I had a really...
What, self-centeredness, drug addiction?
Self-centeredness, yes. His standing in society,
yeah.
being a braggart,
yeah.
all these things.
Yeah.
You know, and just terrible insecurity that, you know, I deal with by acting overtly confident
right.
in an annoying way.
Yeah.
And... So, but more than anything, the love of my life is my mom.
Yeah.
I've never respected a human being more than my mother. And this is the fucker who left her and didn't support her and partied.
Right.
So I couldn't ever let that go because right. I just love my mom too much.
Yeah.
But man, in those 3 months, I was like, this is a fucking boy dying of cancer.
Yeah.
And yes, he's my dad, but he's so much more than my dad. He's a human being that I would, and also I'm in AA. I listen to people's stories that are way worse than my father's, and I totally accept them and love them, and I'm happy for them that they are trying to put that all behind them and make amends. But I couldn't grant my dad that, even though I could do it to anyone else in AA.
And he had sober. Right?
I go to a
meeting. He had sober before you.
Sober before me, yes. Of course, I was judgmental of how he did the
yeah.
program.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever read the big book or whatever. As I continue to judge him always, I thought he was lazy and
yeah.
this and that. But I did get to a point where he was just a guy that was scared, and I could see what a little boy he was
yeah.
trying to process the knowledge that he was going to die. And we did have a moment where we were sitting, and I didn't have any expectations of there being like an Alexander Payne-esque.
But you showed up.
I showed up.
Yeah.
I was fucking there. And I was busy. I was shooting the show, but I was flying back every weekend, or, you know, I was coming back a lot, and I was on the phone with doctors all the time, and I was just handling everything. And I, for some reason, had this desire on one of these trips to Michigan to go photograph every house I ever lived in, because we had lived in about 65 houses. And I thought, I want to document this maybe to show my daughter, you
yeah.
know. And at this point, my wife was 7 months pregnant.
Yeah.
And so on this, we're driving to all these places, and we pull over at the place we moved out of his house into, this welfare apartment building, and we're looking at it, and I take a picture of it, and he goes, you know, I came and dropped a couch off to you guys, and then I left, and I pulled over on the side of the road, and I cried for like 6 hours. I physically couldn't drive the car home. I knew I was driving away from my life, and I just was, and I couldn't turn around and go back. And I was like, wow, I didn't even think he had that moment. And then 2 more stops on the photo shooting trip, he goes, remember I took you to buy a BMX bike, and I said, you can pick out the most expensive one here, and you wanted this other one that was cheap, and I told you not, and it was the wrong decision. He's like, that's always confused me. And I said, I wasn't going to let you buy me the fucking most expensive one because I didn't want you to think you were off the hook. I was purposely not letting you off the hook. At 8.
Yeah.
And he started crying, and that something about that meant so much to him that I was hurting, and I was trying to hurt him, and he knew it, and I said, I'm sorry, I didn't, you know. And we had a fucking moment where I was like, oh my God, this really, like, we're going to die in a, he's going to die in a, we're in a pretty healed relationship. Mind you, I was there for him always, and I supported him the last 5 years he was alive. And
but you're also,
we were buddies. I just, I always had that grudge against him. And also I have a really good friend who I look up to in AA, and he said, you know, I blame my dad for everything. And then he died, and I had no one to blame anymore. And I realized I was just as upset, and it wasn't helping me to blame him, and it was all my shit, and it just didn't get me anywhere to blame him. And I thought, oh fuck, I can either realize that now in this process, or I can realize it in 2 years, but I think he's right, and I'm going to try to get to that point during this process. Well, which I did.
Fortunate that you're both sober guys.
Yes. And again we speak that same
and
language,
you're open to
so...
the you could handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like, I'm not in a good place with it, and I don't know what the hell's going to happen.
Right.
And I got to get there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm stuck.
But boy, did it prove that principle of, like, you know, your body shows up and the rest could follow, which is like, I didn't want it. The irony, my older brother, who he liked way more, they had a great relationship. My older brother has no resentments against him. He was his dad for 8 years and he thought he was great. I was the one that ended up there nonstop because my brother simply couldn't. He didn't have a job that would allow him to do that. And of all the people in the world that ended up doing that, it was me, which was, I thought, pretty fucking funny, you know? And I was the one that needed to be there.
But you got...
He wouldn't have carried anything, my brother. You know, he's at much more peace with it. So had I not had that chance, I would have been dealing with it for years, probably.
Oh, yeah. God.
It was good.
It's a great story.
Yeah. I liked it.
It's weird when you have these kind of conversations where I'm talking to you about this. It's very simple stuff, you know, understanding ideas, you know, about psychology, or trying to understand the ideas that enable us to understand.
Mm-hmm.
That all becomes just, you know, bullshit after a certain point. Because, you know, where the, what's the expression? Where the wheels hit the road, mm-hmm. or whatever the expression is just showing up.
Yeah.
And being open to what's going to happen and knowing you can handle it.
And at a certain point, you gotta acknowledge at a certain point, like right before I met Kristen, I was coming out of a 9-year relationship, it didn't work out.
Yeah.
I was unhappy in a lot of ways, even though I'd achieved all these goals. And at a certain point, I think people, it's important to go, oh, I don't know what's best for myself.
Right.
And that's really hard to understand, that like the things that feel right for you, like people will be in new relationships and they'll go like, oh, it's just not a match, or it's not going easy. And it's like, well, that's probably the one to stick with, because the ones that feel right and feel easy, I did those ones. They don't bear fruit.
But a lot of times is it right and is it easy? It's not even a matter of bearing fruit. With me, the stuff that I lock into immediately is usually going to honor some sort of destructive pattern that I grew up with.
Absolutely.
So, like, you know, meeting somebody that you are connected with, but is also willing to work within, you know, the self-awareness game.
Yes.
And make it better seems to me the best you can hope for. I'm so fucking out at sea with this shit right now. You know, I'm like one step away from like, I'm done with it.
Right. Yeah, right. Sure. Sometimes you think there's more peace in being oblivious, right?
Or being alone.
Oh, okay.
Or just like, you know, like how much can your heart take?
I couldn't do, I've done alone. I'm
not good at it either.
Here's the thing.
I just don't want to be beat
again,
up.
Again, I know from now experience, A, if it feels wrong, I should probably keep doing it, because almost everything I don't want to do ends up being the thing that.
Yeah, but I just don't have the fortitude to, like, it becomes sort of like, if the compromise is unreasonable,
uh-huh.
it's hard for me to stay in it.
Right.
Now, if the compromise is reasonable, and I've tried making compromises with people that, you know, will just obliterate me, because, like, no matter what my personality is here, mm-hmm. you know, my heart is, it is what it is.
Sure.
And, you know, it wants acceptance. It doesn't want to be rejected. It's overly sensitive.
Yeah.
You know, it also worked very hard just to survive in the world.
Uh-huh.
So if somebody is plowing me under, I'm going to be like, ah, fuck this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm losing myself.
Yeah.
So it's very tricky with me, because I got this angry kind of thinky exterior, but I'm ultimately just this hypersensitive motherfucker.
Yeah.
And very insecure.
Uh-huh.
And
I'm those things too.
Yeah. And you know, it's delicate, dude.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know how that gets taken care of.
I think for me, or at least with Kristen, the one thing that eventually I was like, okay, I'm going to take a leap of faith, which is, she was someone who was the opposite of this anthropological view I told you about. Hers, she came from a very Christian background. We did not see eye to eye on anything. I'm an ex-addict. She never did drugs.
Yeah.
All these things, right? And at a certain point, she would go like, hey, will you get me a glass of water? We're both on the couch. And I'm thinking, if I get up and get her a glass of water right now, I'm establishing some pattern where for the rest of my life, I get up and get her a glass. Like, if you're thirsty, get your ass off the couch and go get a fucking glass of water.
Right.
But that's my family and how where I come from.
Yeah.
And because everyone around me was trying to fucking take advantage of me.
Yeah.
And her loving family, sometimes you get me a glass of water and sometimes I get you a glass of water. We're never going to take advantage of each other. But once I keyed in on the fact of, oh, wait, she is a good human being. She's not going to take advantage of me. Fucking go along with some of these things that feel bad and, and new and uncomfortable. As long as I think if you can convince yourself that the person is ultimately a good person, then you can go along with some shit that seems crazy and doesn't feel right and just think it's going to come out on the right side. And for me, it has.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm writing a book. You should pick it up. Soon.
Let me know if you
It's called Love Your Opposite.
Let me know if you want me to write the foreword.
I would like nothing more.
Thanks, man. How fun was that? That guy's a great guy. Good stories. Glad he stopped by. I did run. I did exercise. I did go out and take a nice 3.5 mile run in the 95 degree heat, and I think I almost fucking died. All right? But sometimes that's the price you pay for exercise. Sometimes people go down. Good people go down. Brr. Ugh. Boomer lives!
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.